Talk.
It's 23 minutes after 9 o'clock, and as always on a Friday, I have the pleasure, well, we have the pleasure of hanging out with South Africans doing great things through their work, through their research, whatever it is that they're doing. And as mentioned, later on, we'll speak to Bonzo Pilane. She's been announced as the Health Journalist of the Year. She's been recognized for the way in which she's been using what's called specialist reporting to really highlight some of the issues, some of the concerns, some of the stories, because that's quite important, the stories. Of our public, mainly our public health sector. But I'm joined in studio with a person who's one of 20 who've been named a fellow for the Obama Foundation Fellowship Program. She's also the founder, executive director at Amandla Mobi. Koketso Mweti joins us in studio. Koketso, hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, okay, so there really are just 20 Obama fellows in the whole world.
Yes, there are.
So what does this mean? I mean, it's pretty prestigious, but what does it actually mean to be an Obama Foundation fellow?
So for me personally, number one, being a foundation fellow means that I am a product of my community. I am a product of so many people on whose shoulders I stand. It feels like it's an opportunity to develop myself, to also be the kind of person on whose shoulders others can stand as well.
Yeah.
So it's an amazing affirmation for a whole lot of people who got me to this point.
Yeah.
And the program itself, it's a two-year fellowship program, which basically helps you. It is a way of taking your work to the next level, plugging you in with a different set of community people, plugging you in with a personalized roadmap. What are the problems you are having?
Mm.
What are the barriers to taking your work to the next level and trying to find ways to develop them, to solve them, to give you the resources to help you take it forward?
And you've been recognized for the work that you've been doing, and fantastic work with Amandla Mobi, which started out as an app. Initially. And now for me, I almost think of Amandla as almost a, I don't know what it is. It's like a movement. It's like an amplifier. But it started out as an app. Is that correct?
No. So we were actually not an app. We used mobile off-the-shelf platforms, right?
Okay.
So this would be text messaging, WhatsApp. Initially, we used Mixit as well. You know what happened to Mixit. And then we also have the online platforms. But the way we think of ourselves is Amandla is a collective of people who are constantly trying to take action on issues affecting Black lives, particularly low-income Black women.
Mm.
Yeah. So we do this in different ways, different actions, you know. I think one of the key things we believe at Amandla is that people are not just sitting around waiting
to be saved.
You know,
yeah.
People are doing things. What are the ways we can mobilize people to connect them in ways that incentivize accountability? So you're on that small community of 1,500 households. You're suddenly plugged into a community of so many others saying the same thing and standing on each other's shoulders, taking much more deeper actions.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I mean, you guys, gosh, there's so many campaigns and kind of things that you're involved in. I mean, one of the big ones for me is around trying to find out where is this national coordinated plan to deal with violence against women and women and girls, a plan that doesn't exist. We should have one, but it just doesn't exist. And very often the frustration with perhaps you have an issue and maybe your community has an issue is trying to figure out, how do I get mass action behind it? How do I amplify this? How do I make it more than just our problem and connect with other people who might share similar problems, a similar concern, and begin to start seeing that action? Because often you'll hear people speak about how, well, I want to do something, but I don't know what. So when Amandla comes along, how do you then start plugging in? Because again, there's this idea that people are already doing things. They're not waiting for a 702 or an Amandla or whoever to come along. So how do you then plug into what already exists?
You know, we reach people through different ways. I think this is why the mobile device has been our device of choice, right?
Mm.
We're in a country of many divisions. Many walls exist between us. But one of the things that we have in common is that the majority of households in this country have access to a cell phone device.
Mm.
So it's really about thinking, how do you use that? you're not asking people to do something that is completely outside of the realm. You are saying that, okay, here's a device through which you can connect with others in this way, right? Mm-hmm. And the support that we offer is, you know, helping people think through, supporting people to think through things like, who is the decision maker? What decision is it that we want them to take? And what would be the real world impact of that? Mm-hmm. What is the ways in which we can, you know, shift public discourse on certain things as well, you know? Which has been, I mean, on issues like gender-based violence, on issues like mental health, has been quite a challenge. So it's really about using, meeting people where they are and just using that space to, yeah, take the collective action forward.
How do you decide that this is the work you want to do? When do you decide that this is the work I want to do?
As in Amandla, which campaigns?
No, as in you, Koketso.
Me, Koketso.
Yeah.
I think I am a product of an accident of history. Yeah. I found myself in a certain space, born in a certain time, in which I was surrounded by women who just merely surviving was such an act of resistance because they were living in circumstances that, you know, could have completely defined them, crushed them, and not have allowed them to exist in the first place, you know? And within that community, finding myself in the middle of being part of a collective that was trying to think about resisting an eviction, finding ways to mobilize around in-situ upgrading for the informal settlement and so on. So it was, yeah, I am literally a product of so many collectives and communities.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, so you think about what tools are available and you think mobile, which, I mean, seems to be the obvious one, but we don't, I mean, we think about mobile, but we think about, for the most part, for many people, it's smartphones, not feature phones, for instance. And even when we think about mobile, I think the numbers are there are at least 1 to 2 phones in each household. So if there were everything we have a lot of, or that's almost the most accessible, it were a phone. But there are also so many challenges with phones. Language, I know for my grand, language is a big thing. My grand taught herself how to read. So even that challenge of kind of having to make sense of some of the stuff that may be on the phone becomes an issue. The issue of cost of communicating becomes an issue as well. How do you then get around those issues? And almost thinking of the thinking around a cell phone as more than just how I make calls, send SMSs, you know, let whoever I'm living with to remember to bring the bread and the milk. But this thing is suddenly quite a powerful tool. You can do some serious work with it. How do you begin to shift that, especially where communication is so expensive?
So I think for us, the way we thought about it is that technological advancements have always been made throughout history, right? And those who want to exploit people will always be making use of them. So it's like, it's going to exist. It's not going anywhere. What can we do with it that really changes lives and has real world impact? So the thing about the cell phone, part of our campaign modeling is really being multilingual as well. So on the cell phone, we are deliberately multilingual. We're currently campaigning 4 languages. It's Xhosa, Setswana, isiZulu, and English. And most people actually don't realize one of the biggest barriers to internet access is English literacy. It's not just about data costs, you know? So the ability to be multilingual has been amazing, which is one of the ways we're trying to smash the digital and linguistic divide. With the cost to communicate, we are doing a lot of work around the cost to communicate. And it is also very exciting because, I mean, just for us as a community. But on the other hand, that's why we're deliberate about the platforms we use, you know. USSD is one of them. USSD is basically like the short codes you'd use when
like
recharging.
*111*.
Exactly, which costs much less. So this is kind of the reason that these are the ways in which we decided which platforms that we're using, you know. We really thought about, this is the core constituency that we want to mobilize, or the issues that affect this particular group's lives. Mm-hmm. And where are we? What are we using? Where am I? What's my mother using, you know? And really thinking that through. Yeah.
What are some of the campaigns, some of the work that Amandla is currently working on? A snapshot. Because I know you guys do a lot.
Yeah.
But some of the, you know, ones that you are, I don't know, particularly passionate about, or some of the new ones, or some of the big ones that you guys are currently working on. Because I think you're laughing because there's just so much of it.
Yeah.
But what is some of it?
I think a very, very big one for us was around the VAT hike. I mean, we obviously lost the VAT hike, and we've been deeply engaging with our members about what are the next steps, you know? Is it fighting for the expansion of zero-rated goods? Because we see the VAT hike as an attack on poor black women, right? Poor black women make up the majority of primary caregivers in the households of South Africa. This means the cost of food, the cost of educational resources, the cost of domestic and personal hygiene products has all gone up. So this has been something that we've been working on. We recently, there's a panel of experts that's reviewing the possibility of expanding zero-rated items. So we've been really focused on contributing towards that. We recognize a lot of focus and emphasis around VAT has been around food. But for us, it's very notable that poor people do not just live on food. Mm. What is it that human beings need to live a decent, dignified life?
Yeah,
so that's been a huge thing for us. But also coupled with that is the issue of, there's been rightful issues around certain zero-rated foods or certain zero-rated products tend to have, you know, the inflation on them goes up much more than the rest. So we're also saying that it's not just, we see this as a temporary measure. We're working towards a reversal of the VAT hike next year. But we also know that people need to live right now. And we recognize that this also goes into the regulation of food prices.
Yeah.
It goes into also one of the most exciting things, universal basic income. There is a massive case to be made for that right now.
I mean, so that's come up in the last couple of years as a, you know, how do we begin to, you know, deal with the issue of not just poverty, but inequality as well. And as you say, the, you know, kind of the burden, most of it being on women. Women as primary caregivers, as kind of the source of income in a household, etc. How do we then begin to, you know, deal with the reality of poverty and inequality, which appear to be deepening? Okay, so one of the things that this fellowship does, the Obama Fellowship, is that it gives you, you said, a platform, or it allows you kind of 2 years to think about how to take your work, and your work specifically with Amandla Mobi, to the next level. What is the next level for Amandla? If you're allowed to say, without giving it all away, because I imagine, you know, it's all, but, you know, what would be the next thing? Where to from here?
Mm. So for us, so in relation to the fellowship, it's really been thinking about where does Amandla need to be in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, right? And what do we need to be developing to get to that phase? So I think the big one is continue growing our community, right? Taking deeper actions, making stronger connections between the different levels of oppression. This is one of the reasons we are a multi-issue organization, right? Mm-hmm. We believe that a lot of the issues we campaign on are interlinked in some way or the other. So growing, we see one of our biggest steps will be growing our community to 500,000 people who are taking action. And we see the signature as the first step of action. Different campaigns, for some campaigns, that's enough, you know, but different campaigns do require additional action. So just as an example, during the Data Must Fall campaign, we actually had people, when the Competition Commission called for submissions in their data market inquiry, we had about 708 people who went out and volunteered, went door to door, you know, getting people, you know, to support the submission towards the Competition Commission. We also, during the ICASA hearings on the Data Must Fall, we had people who donated so that Amandla.mobi members could also be part of those hearings. So, yeah, we see it as growing the number of the bigger community, growing the number of actions people are taking, deepening the action as well, and really building a cohesive force that is making massive real world impact wins for Black South Africans.
I mean, one of the most interesting conversations I think I've been lucky to have was with Jay Naidoo, and he spoke about the work involved in organizing communities, organizing individuals to kind of get what we would call mass action or mass movements. And he spoke about how when he started, and he says, I think it was in the 70s, he thought it was the simple work of handing out pamphlets. So you give, go get a pamphlet, you give girls a pamphlet and say, hey, we're meeting on Friday. And that was it. And he said, people, no one showed up. And then he learned about, you know, to build the kind of large movements that we eventually saw, for instance, in many of the anti-apartheid movements, was it, you needed to build connections. It was relationship building. He also made the example of Fees Must Fall, saying part of why it managed to be what it was that kind of door-to-door foot, you know, work, that grind, which is, it's not sexy, it's not, you know, it's not easy. But he spoke about, you know, that's how you begin to do it. And in your experience, building this mass and, you know, one that you want to grow to 500,000, is it that difficult, that building of relationships, that you can't just give me a pamphlet and then, you know, you must show an interest in me, this community, my experience, et cetera, that it's work. Building a kind of a mass movement and getting buy-in is a lot of work.
It completely, completely is. You know, one of the stories that I often tell is just before the patients from Life Isidimeni were moved out, right? And I think of that as a massacre of mental health patients. We had been campaigning for, you know, people not to be moved. And I remember a colleague of mine who would go to meetings with the family members, you know, and would always just come back so, so deeply disturbed, you know, during the protests with the family members. And there is a lot that goes into it. People are giving so much of themselves, so much of their lives. And, you know, people were still moved and the hurt that happened. And one of the most interesting things for me was seeing how we went from, it wasn't one of our biggest campaigns when we had asked for people to not be moved. Mm. But once there were deaths, there was a greater concern about the issue, you know, after the fact instead of before.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of work. I mean, mental health, that campaign alone taught me a lot about, you know, the stigma around mental health.
Yeah.
There were some people, I remember talking to one of my colleagues who was working with another organization that was involved, and I was in his office, and he said to me, you know, some of the people I spoke to, who I think of as deeply progressive, they said that, I mean, these aren't tax contributing citizens anyway, so why should we care?
Wow.
It's literally that difficult, you know? And I think on certain issues, South Africa is generally, there are certain issues where people are much more likely to take action than on others. And I think for us, it's really been the hard slog work has really been making people see those connections or helping people make those connections that would ordinarily not be made.
Mm. Mm. So if I'm listening and I'm thinking, how do I then, because certainly for me as a radio presenter, one of the big questions I have quite often is a kind of despair or a hopelessness or a confusion maybe about how do I then begin to deal with the issue of femicide, for instance, right? How do I begin to deal with the issue of the VAT increase or, you know, the state of public health, for instance? I don't know where to go. I can call into 702 and maybe we can get the minister, but that's about it. How do then people who might not know about Amandla get involved? Do you want them to get involved? In what way can you get involved? Because I think very often as well, when we think about doing stuff, you think you're going to arrive and, you know, have a solution or your idea is the one we're going to go with. So, you know, even in the kind of engagement, if someone's looking to engage with Amandla, how do they begin to do it? Who are you looking for?
So basically, people can visit us on www.amandla.mobi. But we also have a distributed campaign platform where members of the public and organizations can set up their own campaigns. It's called Awetu.mobi. Get it? Amandla? Awetu.
Yeah. It's actually really smart.
Yes. So members of the public can go to Awetu.mobi. We have, you know, it gives you a complete, it guides you, you know, as part of the process. Once you reach this, how you could organize events, how you should think about communicating with people, how you can spread the word about your issue. We also undertook a very, very interesting research project last year, right? Mm-hmm. We took different campaigns and compared what is it that makes campaigns much, what are the variables that make campaigns much more likelier to win? We see this as very, very valuable towards not just Amandla as an organization, but the organizations, the partners and individuals that we work with, you know? So yeah, there's a whole lot of ways in which, yeah, we offer support, and we really do try to base that support on like hardcore evidence-based stuff. And we're constantly refining. I think one of the most wonderful things about this community is that, one, it's a community that holds us accountable as well, and it's a community we reach out to. We do surveys at the beginning of the year, you know. What are the issues that people want us to focus on? What do they think should we do? If we come to a dead end with a certain decision maker or on a campaign, there's different steps that can be taken. We reach out to our members, like, what do you think we should do?
Yeah.
And I think these, yeah, so these are just some of the ways and the actions that people can participate, you know, in helping us be better, in growing the community, and in really guiding and strengthening this collective action taking.
Koketso, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's been a pleasure. I've been meaning to get you on the show for some time now, and I'm glad we finally did it. So thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
That's Koketso Moete, Executive Director at Amandla Mobi, and also one of 20 inaugural Obama Foundation fellows for the next 2 years. And she's one of our South Africans doing great things. When we come back, our second South African doing great things, and the recently announced Health Journalist of the Year. Stay with us.